This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is KT McFarland, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for President Reagan. She also served in the administrations of Presidents Nixon and Ford. We want to get her reaction today to the report from the commanding U.S. general in Afghanistan, painting a less than positive portrait of the current circumstances against the Taliban and al-Qaeda and our other enemies in that theater, and what he thinks needs to be done in order to reverse the momentum right now and give the U.S. a chance to be successful in our operations there. And KT, thanks so much for being with us.
Great pleasure, Greg.
Well, we knew that it was a long, hard slog, to use a term used by Don Rumsfeld a few years ago, but we've seen in recent weeks that the terminology seemed to be more and more pessimistic. What do you make of today's report suggesting that we definitely need a significant strategy revision in order to be ultimately successful there?
Yeah, I was in Afghanistan in May, and I concluded very much the same thing, that what we had been doing for the last 8 years just was not working for a whole number of reasons. But I think that what General McChrystal has to do in his report is ask the president to make several decisions, which he's so far not done. Number one, what's our goal in Afghanistan? Is it to support a democratically elected government? Is it to create a civil society? Is it to win hearts and minds? Is it to kill bad guys? And we've not yet decided which of those it is. And all of those may be noble goals, but they take very different requirements, often competing resources. So, for example, if your goal is to win the hearts and minds of the Afghan people, which is often called a counterinsurgency strategy, then you're oftentimes going to not go after terrorists. You're not going after militants. You're going to focus on building roads and schools and a civil society. If your goal is a counterterrorist strategy, you're going after terrorists, you're going after insurgents and militants, and you're not focused on the more civilian things. So the president's got to decide first and foremost what's his goal in Afghanistan.
KT, from the Americans you talked to in Afghanistan as well as the Afghans you talked to there, do they have a clear understanding of what they think the U.S. mission is there?
No. Everybody I talked to, and I was in a unique position because I was able to talk to American military, NATO military, NGO people, government people, diplomats, and including Afghan military and Afghan political leaders. And almost everybody I talked to seemed to have a different impression of what the United States' goal was. But one man that I talked to, an Afghan political leader, who was not running for president this time around, but certainly in the group of the top leaders of Afghanistan, he said, "You have to understand, don't be angry at my people. We know you will eventually leave, and we just want to get as much out of America as we can until that time."
KT, you mentioned that our mission hasn't been properly articulated. What's your advice for the president on how best to do that?
I think he's got to make it a narrower mission than he has now, because he's going to be faced with a choice, Greg, regardless of what mission he claims that it is. Is he going to increase troops? Now, when I was in Afghanistan, as the surge was just beginning, we clearly don't have enough troops to do any of these major objectives that he's talking about. We may even need to double the size of the troops. Well, is the American public going to support that? I'm not sure. The other option he has is to start withdrawing. That has a lot of problems with it, too, not the least of which is political for President Obama, because remember, he declared as a candidate that Afghanistan was the good war and Iraq was the bad war. Politically, it would be very difficult for him to have a victorious situation in Iraq and a losing situation in Afghanistan. But the thing I worry about the most is that he continues more or less where we are now, with not enough forces to make a difference and to prevail, and just enough forces to make sure that we stave off defeat. And that's that sort of twilight zone where we continue to sort of beat our head against the wall, but have no different outcome than we've had in the last 8 years.
How concerned are you about the falling poll numbers in support of the continued U.S. presence in Afghanistan?
Well, I think that's what President Obama's got to decide. If he wants to prevail in this situation, he's got a real salesmanship job to do. He has not done it so far. But at the end of the day with Afghanistan, no matter what you do, even if you were to prevail, win the hearts and minds of the people, have a self-sustaining democracy in Afghanistan, which I think is a long shot, but even if that were to happen, the real key in the Middle East, that part of the Middle East, is Pakistan and Pakistan's nuclear weapons, because that is the direct existential threat to the United States, more so even than militants in Afghanistan.
We're talking with KT McFarland, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. She has served three different U.S. presidents. on the defense side of policy. And KT, we had a guest on last week, a former CIA official, who said that the Obama administration's decision through the Attorney General to publicly launch a preliminary inquiry into CIA interrogations of terrorist detainees that might have gone beyond the legal definition of what's permissible is basically the Obama administration checking out of the war on terror, because the demoralization of the agents will make our intelligence gathering operations all but impossible. We heard similar concerns expressed by former Vice President Cheney on Sunday. What's your sense of the impact of this probe on the community?
It'll be disastrous. You know, we have been to this movie before in 1975 and 1976. I was on the National Security Council staff, and I watched as the congressional hearings and investigations into the CIA, and they may have started with a small objective, but at the end of the day, we put the CIA on trial in 1975 and 1976, and the result was spy networks, human intelligence, whatever you want to call it, was eviscerated. And so for 20 years, we were blind to things like terrorist cells. We didn't see the fall of the Shah of Iran coming in 1978. We didn't see the breakup of the Soviet Union coming. We didn't see the growth of Islamic Jihad. We didn't see the Islamic jihadists in Afghanistan turning from being anti-Soviet to anti-American. We missed all of those because we didn't have human intelligence, which is what you need for that. We relied on satellites and signal intelligence, which is great at finding, you know, intercontinental ballistic missiles or large masses of military or tanks moving. But what it's lousy at seeing is a bunch of guys in a cave in Afghanistan plotting to blow up the Twin Towers. For that, you need human intelligence. And if we now follow President Obama and Attorney General Holder are going to investigate the CIA, it will no doubt be followed within a few weeks by Speaker Pelosi calling for congressional hearings. We know she's got a bone to pick with the CIA to start with. And if we do in today what we did in 1975 to the CIA, then we will once again be blind to the most important intelligence gathering that we need to have right now, which is human intelligence.
Is there a way the president could reverse this momentum that you're clearly concerned about, or now that the ball's been started rolling, it's pretty hard to stop it?
Well, it's one, you know, look, maybe there works, maybe people did stupid things in the CIA. Maybe they did exceed their mandates. If so, deal with it privately. Don't deal with it on the national news and on national television, because, you know, if you deal with it privately, investigate it, if people need to be punished or saying whatever you need to do, do it outside of the glare of the world's attention, because two things are going to happen. One, we're once again going to destroy the human intelligence gathering capability of the CIA. And number two, we're going to yet again give an opportunity to radical jihad to have more poster boys for recruitment. I think it's just a dreadful mistake, and it not only is probably, I think, unethical to go after people who thought they were doing the right thing at the time, but it's a very foolish decision because it will harm American security going forward.
Last topic here, KT, and that's that day by day we keep hearing more information about what may have been involved in the release of Megrahi, the Lockerbie bomber convicted back in 2001, the only person convicted of blowing up Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. We heard some reports late last week that prostate cancer specialists wouldn't even confirm that he was within that three-month compassionate release window. And now, of course, we have some current and former British officials saying, yeah, there was kind of a quid pro quo here to grease the skids for a multi-billion dollar oil deal with Libya. Your thoughts on what we're learning there?
I'm boycotting Scotch. No, in all seriousness, it's a bigger problem. There does seem to be mounting evidence that there was some kind of a quid pro quo deal of exchanging a terrorist in exchange for favorable treatment on oil deals. And if so, that's just reprehensible. It's an abomination. The other thing, though, it points to is the extreme vulnerability that Europe has to the whole energy issue. You know, do they get their energy from Russia, from natural gas from Russia, and then they're beholden to the Russians? Or do they look around for oil supplied by other countries? Well, where is that oil going to come from? Iran, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Libya? None of these are Algeria. None of these are terrific choices for the world. So I think it's very important for the United States to move in the direction of weaning us off of Middle East oil. Not necessarily should wean us off by alternate sources? That's one part of the question. But we should be drilling for oil. We should be refining oil. We should use some of the natural resources that we have to fill the gap.
Last question before we let you go, KT, and that's that the Obama administration, the president himself, as well as the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, publicly said before the decision to release Meg Rahi that they opposed it. Some have said, though, that given the number of Americans on the flight and the whole dimension of the massive issue of the Lockerbie bombing, that the British or even the Scots would not have released him without some secret okay from the U.S. Given your experience in government, is that likely or not necessarily likely?
I think it's highly unlikely that the British would have done it without some kind of informing the American government beforehand. And if, you know, the world has been turned upside down. We're now to the point where we're going to investigate the CIA, the people who were charged with helping us stay safe, at the same time that we're releasing people who were involved with killing Americans. It really is turned upside down. We should be doing just the opposite.
KT, unfortunately, our time is up. As always, great to be with you.
Great pleasure, and happy Labor Day.
Thank you. Happy Labor Day to you, too. KT McFarland, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for President Reagan, also served in the Ford and Nixon administrations. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.